Welcome to International Edition. I'm Dusan Yalki in Washington. Ahead, our correspondent shares the excitement of the Pope's arrival in Kenya. From Moscow, we get a look at tensions after Turkey downed that Russian plane. We speak with the author of a book about the Amur River region.
What was in essence a pretty empty place had a very rich and full backstory.
It's right here on the Voice of America. Pope Francis today began his first official tour of Africa. He arrived in Nairobi, Kenya, then heads to Uganda and the Central African Republic. Correspondent Jill Craig is in the Kenyan capital and actually got to see the Pope, and she joins us on the line. Welcome, Jill.
Hi, Susan. Thanks.
Hey, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was very, very exciting. And I can tell you, I personally am not Catholic, but I also was caught up in the mania for just a moment or two. There were probably, I would say, thousands of Kenyans who had sort of lined the highway going from the airport to State House, where the Pope is currently meeting with the president and other diplomats. And I can tell you that, you know, people here are very, very excited. And, you know, even if they're not Catholic, they also see the importance of the Pope visiting their country. And I spoke to a few Muslims even, and, you know, they were also very, very, you know, pleased that the Pope had selected Kenya for his first stop on his African tour. Along the way, you had people singing, you had people dancing, a lot of ladies wearing the traditional congas here, the sort of the scarves wrapped around their waist with the Pope's image on them. So, and also banners and signs, of course. And every time that a car came by, one of the, you know, the presidential motorcade cars, or, you know, for that matter, even the police or the ambulance, before the Pope showed up, people were cheering and, you know, very, very excited. So the mood here is one of, I would say, of joy.
Well, was the Pope in his little Fiat like he was when he was here in Washington?
Well, that's what we were all thinking. No, actually, the Pope was in a little Honda.
Oh.
So I think he's changed vehicles for this trip.
Okay. Say, besides having fun, there are some serious meetings he's holding there.
Well, I can tell you that tomorrow, you know, first he'll have Mass at the university, which is sort of his headliner event. But, you know, he does also have the serious meetings that you've mentioned. He will be meeting with an interfaith group. So I think he's got a group of Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, and, you know, maybe some Protestants in there as well. So he'll be meeting with that group later on during his trip. He's also got a trip to the Kangemi slum scheduled. And, you know, the Pope has always, during his papacy, he's sort of talked a lot about poverty and helping the underprivileged, you know, try to make a better life for themselves. And so he's actually going to be visiting a slum. On Friday morning, he'll be visiting Kangemi, and people there are especially excited because that's an area that probably doesn't get as much attention as others, and so I think they're particularly excited that the Pope is visiting. So, you know, he's got a lot of meetings set up. He's also got a meeting at UNEP, I should mention, where, as we know from his trip to Washington, he definitely has made climate change one of the issues that he's brought up throughout his papacy, and so tomorrow he will also be meeting with UNEP, and so I think that, you know, he's addressing a lot of serious issues, while at the same time, I think his goal is to, you know, sort of show compassion toward the poor and sort of show people that, you know, sort of show them the correct way to live as opposed to just telling them.
Amid all the excitement, I hate to bring this up, but with all the terrorism reports in the news of late, you know, the security must be really tight.
Yes, it is. The reports that we got from the Kenyan police chief was 10,000 additional police had been brought in for this event. And you can notice that you see it as well around. I mean, normally at a traffic roundabout, you'd have probably four policemen, you know, sort of directing traffic. And now you've got double that, you know, plus more police along the route. And then also many of the streets are closed down entirely based on wherever the Pope is going. So I would say that that the Kenyan security forces say that they've got things under control.
Well, thank you very much, Jill. I hope you enjoy the Pope's visit.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks a lot.
There are a couple of ways online that you can follow the excitement over the Pope's tour of Africa. And my colleague Michael Lippin joins me here in the studio to tell us how. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Susan. Well, the Pope himself is on Twitter, and you can follow his English tweets at Pontifex. And then you can search for tweets using popular hashtags like hashtag Pope in Africa and hashtag Pope in Kenya. Hashtag Pope in Kenya is the most widely used one right now. The Topsy Analytics website shows that it's been mentioned about 7,000 times in the past day, while hashtag Pope in Africa has had 2,000 mentions. As Pope Francis moves on to the next stops of his tour, you know, you can also expect hashtag Pope in Uganda and hashtag Pope in CAR to get a lot of mentions as well.
Well, what tweets are getting attention with the hashtag Pope in Kenya?
Well, one Twitter user who's getting noticed for using that hashtag is journalist Alan Holdren. He's the Rome bureau chief for the Catholic News Agency. His handle is @AlanHoldren, and he tweeted a Vine video clip that's a 6-second clip of the Pope offering a blessing to Kenyans, Mungu Abariki Kenya. That's God Bless Kenya in Swahili. So I would recommend going and checking out that clip and activating the sound to hear the joyous reaction that he got to that greeting. And the Pope actually tweeted the same greeting on his English Twitter handle while he was on the plane to Kenya from Italy. That particular tweet has been retweeted 4,000 times and liked more than 6,000 times. And I just want to give you a sample of some of the comments that it generated. Here's one from Antoni Sli. At Pontifex, Asante Sana, welcome to our country. Pray for us and with us. Hashtag blessed Kenya. And here's a tweet from Josh Mwajasi. Pontifex Holy Father, tackle the corruption issue in your talks with the president, please. It's destroying the country. So that's a more serious tweet. And then here's one from someone who calls himself New York Atheist, whose handle is @ReasonAndLogic. He says, while you're there, Pontifex, please tell them it's okay to use condoms. You'd be doing the continent a big favor. Susan?
Thank you, Michael, and I'm impressed with your Swahili.
I'm trying my best. Thanks.
It's a wait-and-watch situation after the downing of a Russian plane by Turkey. Turkey claims it was violating its airspace. Joining us on the line from Moscow right now is our correspondent there, Daniel Scharf. Welcome, Daniel.
Good to be here.
Thank you very much. Hey, what is going on here?
Well, we saw a little bit more rhetoric coming out of Moscow today with the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, made some comments saying that essentially that it appeared to be a planned provocation by Turkey, the shooting down of this Russian bomber jet that was flying along the border with Syria, and saying that, of course, repeating that this is very much going to have a serious consequence between Russia and Turkey relations. At the same time, they haven't really spelled out exactly what they're going to do in retaliation. Certainly, there's no indication that any kind of military retaliation is imminent, although the Russian authorities did announce that they would be sending some advanced long-range missiles to their base in Syria. And that does indicate, at least, that they are planning to further defend any other Russian jets or bombers that will be operating in Syria. They've also announced late yesterday that they would be sending fighter jets as escorts from now on with all of their bomber planes that are operating in Syria, supposedly targeting terrorist groups such as Islamic State, although Western sources and governments have been saying that most of those bombs have been hitting rebels that have been fighting against Moscow's ally, President Bashar al-Assad.
Where were Turkey-Russian relations before this incident happened?
You know, they kind of go up and down, but in general, they were you know, more or less on friendly terms. They've been negotiating a oil pipeline project, which is now in question. It would be a new oil pipeline. They've already got one gas pipeline, rather, going through Turkey, and this one would be bypassing Ukraine to deliver gas to Western Europe. But it's been kind of a problematic deal as it is, trying to negotiate all the details to get the pipeline up and running. And it's one of the economic projects that Russia is now implicitly threatening to put on hold or potentially even cancel. There's also been a concerted push by the government to discourage Russians from traveling to Turkey, saying that it may not be safe for them there because Turkey supports terrorism, according to President Putin. You know, certainly there's a concern that Russians could be targeted by anyone who perceives them as being against them. So there's a big push not to encourage travel to Turkey. A lot of Russian tourist agencies have canceled package tours. So there's going to be a big economic impact both in Turkey and here in Russia.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel, for speaking with us from Moscow.
My pleasure.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A new study from the University of Southern California finds that when couples talk, it isn't the words they say, but the tone of their voice that can predict whether their relationship will improve or worsen. The USC team fed a number of recorded conversations between 100 couples during marriage therapy sessions into a computer running a newly developed algorithm. The system makes its predictions based on various acoustical properties of the couple's voices. After comparing the computer results with a 2-year follow-up study, the researchers found that their new program had a 79% accuracy rate of forecasting the success or failure of the relationships. They say their algorithm was even more successful at predicting relationships than those made by relationship experts during the original marriage therapy sessions. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The Midwest U.S. city of Chicago, Illinois, is tense for fears about protests following the release of a video showing a veteran white police officer shooting a black teenager. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti joins us on the line now, live from Chicago. Hi, Carolyn.
Hello, Susan.
How is the situation there now?
Well, the situation is really calm here right now, only because the protests occurred last night during the dark. But the protesters say they will be back out again today, tonight, again as it turns to dark.
What does this video show?
The video that was released shows a police cruiser's dash cam. It shows a 17-year-old, Laquan McDonald, walking toward a police car and then veering away a bit and walking down the street. He has a knife in his hand, and an officer opens fire on him. He falls to the ground, and the officer continues to fire shots at him. 16 shots in 30 seconds were fired at the 17-year-old.
And I understand he has been charged, the officer has been charged with murder?
Yes, he was charged with first-degree murder yesterday. So it was the revealing of this videotape and the charging and the time it took for this officer to actually be charged that sparked all the protests last night.
This sounds very graphic, this video. I've seen a little bit of it, but what does the officer say? What is his explanation for shooting this kid 16 times?
His attorney has said everyone is watching this video in the comfort of their living room. He said, wait until you hear all the details before you make a decision on his guilt or innocence. Now, we've also heard that he will say it was in self-defense because he feared for his life because the 17-year-old had a knife, and he wasn't dropping it. He had the other hand in his pocket.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carolyn, for staying on top of this for us.
Sure. No problem.
Coming up on International Edition, we hear about the rich backstory of the Amur River. And a popular 28-year-old appears to have another hit on her hands. I've recently been reading a very interesting book about traveling in the region along the Chinese-Russian border. It's called Black Dragon River, A Journey Down the Amur River at the Borderlands of Empires by Dominic Ziegler. And the author, who I might mention is an expert on Asia with The Economist, joins us on the line. Welcome, Dominic.
Nice to be here, Susan.
Oh, thank you for saying so. This is a region of such complexity. Cultures, politics, history?
Well, it started off to me as an empty region, and that was really what drew me to it. I first saw the Amur River, the ninth longest river in the world, from out of the window of an airplane. And there looked to be very few people there across a whole wide white expanse in midwinter. So soon after, I went to look at the river and to explore it, and what was in essence a pretty empty place had a very rich and full backstory.
Maybe you might give us a brief history of that.
Well, the Amur River is today the river that runs between Russia and China, and it forms a very large part of those two countries' borders. And the heart of the story, which I cover in my book, is a kind of wild, extravagant delusion on the part of Russia in the middle of the 19th century, a huge land grab of Chinese territory, whose scale is a lot greater than the Western depredations along the east coast of China that are better known, for instance, Britain taking Hong Kong and other foreigners establishing themselves in Shanghai. And the reason Russia got so excited about this river that sort of hung off the eastern edge of their empire was that they saw in it a kind of Pacific destiny. It was a kind of bout of escapism, really. Back in European Russia, under the Tsar Nicholas I, the country was stagnant and autocratic. Both conservatives and their sort of archenemies, the liberals, in that European Russia, turned to the armor and saw there a kind of manifest destiny. And I have to say that they actually knew much, much more about the unfolding of the American West and the opening of the American frontier than they did about this new river, which they claimed to be their own.
You write that Russia adopted some of the region's customs, like government control.
Well, so there's a long and ancient debate in Russia about, you know, where it gets its kind of its authoritarianism, and you know, many people think that actually it was the depredations of the Mongols, who, after all, you know, in the 13th century came right into, you know, what is now Russia, and although they kind of ruled at arm's length through local princes, raising taxes through these princes, that kind of sort of sense of autocracy may be something that rubbed off on Russia and impressed Russian rulers. And Putin himself says that Russia's soul lies as much in the east as in the west, and arguably that's where that strong sense of kind of political control, as a sort of a need to kind of tie a vast empire together, comes from.
Thank you, Dominic. Dominic Ziegler, author of A Journey Down the Amur River at the Borderlands of Empires. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
The World Health Organization recently put processed meats like hot dogs on its Group 1 list of things for which there is sufficient evidence of a cancer link. The WHO put other red meat in a lower classification of colon cancer risk. University of Cardiff professor Robert Picard says the distinction between processed meat and red meat is important.
The uncertainty is generated because, of course, you can treat meats in very different ways. For example, if you're preserving it and adding a lot of smoke, then you can introduce carcinogens, possibly, in that process.
Picard says, however, that people should not panic about their meat consumption.
The bottom line in nutrition is to eat a little bit of as many different things as possible.
Estimates are that some 34,000 deaths from cancer worldwide could be attributed to diets high in processed meat. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Ellie Goulding, the popular British singer, has released her third album, and to share with us all about it is Larry London, host of Border Crossings. Welcome, Larry.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, the name of the new album is Delirium. It is Ellie Goulding's third album, and she already finds the album at the number 3 position on the UK
charts. That's pretty good.
And very impressive.
And she has one hit you particularly like?
I really like this song, and it's called On My Mind, which is a top 20 UK chart hit and doing very well here in the US on the American charts. And the song, a lot of people are saying, is her answer to Ed Sheeran's song, Don't. He wrote a song, recorded a song, was about a relationship where the other person in the relationship cheated on him and broke his heart. And now this supposedly is her response to him, because the two of them did, in fact, have a relationship at one time.
Now I don't understand it. You don't mess with love, you mess with the truth. And I know I shouldn't say it, but my heart don't understand why I got you on my mind.
You always know the story behind the story and the dirt on everybody.
I do. I've got the dirt. If you want dirt, I've got piles of it.
Well, what's this young woman like? 28. That seems young to
28, me. 28, and she is the picture of fitness and health. In fact, she appears now on the cover of Shape magazine showing off her six-pack abs and talking about her workout regime, which is about 5 days a week, sometimes two times a day. She's been dating another singer in the UK. His name's Dougie Pointer. A lot of people wonder, are they getting married? She's been seen with a diamond ring, sometimes with it, sometimes without it. She was in Stockholm recently for the Swedish Idol TV show. She sang her new song, On My Mind, on the show. She appears in the latest Marie Claire magazine. And she also just filled in for Rihanna at the Victoria's Secret Supermodel concert. They had a big, giant show. Rihanna was supposed to appear. She pulled out at the last minute, and Ellie Goulding came into the rescue.
And you tell me, she likes to use the name Goulding, even though her name's not spelled that way.
That's right. It's interesting because she does spell it G-O-U-L-D-I-N-G, but she says, call me Goulding, not Goulding. And so we'll make sure we do exactly that. And by the way, she got the Brit Award in 2014 for the favorite British female singer. So she's loved in England, and she's loved around the world.
You think she's a keeper?
She's definitely a keeper.
Okay, thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Susan.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The flow of illicit narcotics across the U.S.-Mexico border fuels violence in both countries and at our shared border. It is incumbent on both countries to address this challenge. To date, the U.S. has delivered to Mexico more than $1.4 billion in assistance, including training and equipment. This assistance has been delivered through the Merita Initiative, an unprecedented partnership between the United States and Mexico to fight organized crime and associated violence while furthering respect for human rights and the rule of law. At present, said U.S. Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs William Brownfield, the U.S. has more than $600 million in bilaterally agreed-upon projects with Mexico. These projects fall into three areas. The first is professionalizing the Mexican law enforcement agencies. The Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement, or INL, is working to strengthen policing capacity at state and municipal levels in Mexico. As a result, said U.S. Assistant Secretary Brownfield, we expect there will be greater observance of civil and human rights and growing trust in these institutions by the people of Mexico. This is vital to any effort to stem drug trafficking, reduce the capabilities and influence of drug cartels, and secure our border with Mexico. With regard to border security, both countries have committed to increase Mexico's ability to interdict illicit narcotics, arms, and money, as well as strengthen control of porous border areas. INL is providing more than $125 million in inspection equipment and about 340 canine teams deployed at ports of entry and internal checkpoints throughout the country. Mexican drug cartels have in recent years increasingly turned to heroin trafficking. Under Merida, the United States is cooperating with Mexico to combat the threat posed by heroin production and trafficking. INL is building Mexico's heroin interdiction capabilities, including training, inspection equipment, and providing canines. Mexico is committed to judicial reform, which is slated to be implemented throughout the country in mid-2016. The United States will continue to work with Mexico to build a strong and able justice system there to improve rule of law efforts. INL's work in Mexico under the Merita Initiative has already achieved far-reaching positive results. And I am confident, said U.S. Assistant Secretary Brownfield, that with U.S. cooperation and assistance, Mexico will continue to make progress.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.